Good morning. Today's daf in Sota Chaf Ches. Thank the Masuth family from West Orange, New Jersey for sponsorship of the daf. Learning that we do this morning should be Lezecha Nishmas Nehemiah ben Avraham. We are starting with the Gemara. We are right at the Gemara at the beginning, at the very bottom of Chaf Zayin and Beis. And so obviously the Gemara is going to be discussing our mission. Let's recap, let's review. Yesterday we opened up with the fifth parak of the Masechta, and we talked about the effects of the water and the Isser that's going to be created. So as far as the effects of the word are concerned, the mayim is going to be bodik, her, and him. So those are two pronouns. Now the her is a clear pronoun, meaning we're talking about the woman who was married and committed adultery. But the him, so there are two hims involved in the story. There's the him, the husband, and there's the him, the boel. So probably when I read the Mishnah yesterday, I'm going to say it better. Definitely when I read the Mishnah yesterday, so I said the oso is referring to the boel. I'm happy to report that I was right. Although the Gemara in the beginning of today's daf is going to entertain for just a moment, maybe it's some other him. Maybe it's a husband. We'll see that in the Gemara in just moments. But meanwhile, however, point number one of the Mishnah is that there's going to be a bedika done on her and on him, him meaning the boel, right, the paramour. So, and the water, when she drinks the water, and if in fact she was guilty and she had relations with the man while they were beseser, so not only is she gonna die, but the boel is gonna die as well. And, rather amazing. In other words, obviously miraculous, meaning, well, it's miraculous that she's dying. In other words, she's drinking water. So that already is an ace. But in other words, the extension of the ace is gonna be that despite the fact that the boel is not drinking at all, but nevertheless, he's gonna die. In other words, the boel is gonna die as well. That's point number one of the Mishnah yesterday. And how do we arrive at that point? Through, via drushas. So we're going to go in a moment. We're going to go over the drushas because the Gemara in today's daf is going to be spending a good amount of time with those drushas, wrapping its head a little bit better around those drushas. How exactly do those drushas work? Number two, second point of the Mishnah is Isser, that once she in fact is verified that she had relations with this man, now she's Usser. She's Usser to a number of people. She's Usser to the Baal. She's Usser to the Baal. She's Usser to her husband and she is Usser to the Baal. As we already pointed out from day one of the Masechta, it does not automatically terminate the marriage. The marriage is still there. They are still married, but they're also to one another. Obviously, necessitating a get, he has to divorce her. And because she's verified now that she did in fact sleep with this other man, she is obviously going to be forfeiting her ksuva. In the previous parak, we talked about the times that she's forfeiting her ksuva, the times that she's not forfeiting. Obviously, this would be an occasion in which she'd be forfeiting her ksuva because of the verification that she slept with the other man. But in other words, it's a compound isser, an isser to him. But over here, instead of saying pronouns, let's say the husband and the boel, the baal and the boel. Okay. This too is also learned via drasha, and this too we're going to go over a little bit later on in terms of how exactly the drashas work. This is what we saw yesterday in the Mishnah. And then from that point going forward, the Mishnah went totally off-road. The Mishnayos, all the Mishnayos of the fifth parak are front-loaded. We went through every one of the Mishnayos yesterday, but obviously from a cursory standpoint, we really didn't go into any kind of depth in the Mishnayos. And as we go over the Gemara these next couple of days, as we go here through the fifth parak, so we're going to be covering some of the points in the Mishnah. Obviously, it's a short parak, another short parak coming up over here. We're not going to be going through that many points of the Mishnah, and I'm not going to go right now over all the other points that we made yesterday in the Mishnah, but it was totally on different topics, four different topics discussed. But for now, we're going to be focusing on our Sota because the entirety of today's daf is going to be focusing on the Bedika and the Isser. So those two points that we just previewed at the beginning of today's daf is going to be what we're going to be discussing throughout the duration of today. We're starting with the Gemara Oso. Oseleman. So the Mishnah says that there's going to be a bedika, it's going to go on her, and it's going to go on him. So who's the him? Okay, so I already, in the preview, in the introduction, I already told you the answer, but the Gemara now is for a moment going to entertain. So Elam Labal, maybe it's talking about the husband, Ba, my of it. So the obvious question, which is just amazing that the Gemara is even entertaining this, and that is the husband over here didn't do anything, meaning he's innocent. Now, so Ba, my of it, Vechitam, and the Gemara says, and I know immediately. We're going to move to the suggestion that the Iizbei Avon Batkele Mai. Well, maybe he wasn't innocent. Maybe he's guilty. Maybe he did something. And the Gemara here says that when the husband did something, what's a something? Obviously, we're talking about an avera. So you look at Rashi over here. Shabbat Le Lachash and Istira. In other words, that he had relations with his wife after Stira. So after seclusion now. So already she has the status of being a sota. He is already prohibited to her. And maybe the bedika is going to be the bedika is going to go on the husband because he, in fact, was with his wife. So the Gemara says that can't be. Meaning, of course, it can be, but not in the context of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Kis be'avam b'didei, so me bat galei mai l'dida, v'atanya v'nika ish me'avon, v'isha hiti sa'savana, v'zman she ish menuka me'avon, mayim botkin es ishto, ena ish menuka me'avon, ena mayim botkin es ishto. So a point that we already made a number of times in the Masechta, and we get to review the point again today, and that is that when is the water going to be effective as testing it to what exactly happened in that room and whether or not she was metam in that room or not? The water is only going to test when he is vindicated and he himself is free of sin. However, if he is saddled with sin, so then the mayim is not going to be bodek. So that's a drasha. The Gemara has repeated this drasha numerous times. And over here, obviously, it's relevant. Because if the mayim is going to be bodek, that means that the husband has to be in the free and clear. Now, free and clear of what? So, again, I go back to Rashi. Rashi says over here, Shalom ba'ala mishin esra alav, ha'isha, ha'i, tisavonoshi of dekua mayim. So Rashi over here says that the husband has to be free and clear of not having relations with her post-stira. Good. That's Rashi. And Rashi's been consistent about that point throughout the Masechta. That what we're looking for innocence of the husband, we mean innocence of the husband vis-a-vis his wife. Once his wife became usher to him via kinui and stira, so then he didn't have relations with her afterwards. That's the that's Rashi throughout the Masechta. And why am I emphasizing this point? Because presumably, seemingly, the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam's of the position that in order for the mayim to be bodek, the man has to be free of any kind of bias isser whatsoever. I don't have the Rambam in front of me. I'm not reading the Rambam inside, but a simple reading of the Rambam. It's the second parak of Hilchos Sota. So the Rambam seems to indicate that he has to be totally free of any Isser Bia. Okay, which means now that obviously that is more responsibility of the husband on his part of being innocent. And I perused yesterday. There is a lengthy discussion on this Rambam. Many questions that you can ask, a number of things that this position resolves. But anyway, for today, for the daf, I'm just going to present it like Rashi. And that is that the husband's innocence has to be tied to the fact that he didn't sleep with his wife post-dira. Let's say it over like Rashi. So that's v'nika, right? V'nika ha'ish me'avon. So the husband has to be free and clear. So fine. So in other words, so now when we're saying that the mayim is bodek, it's bodek him and her. So again, the her is clear. We know who her is. There's only one her in the story. But when we talk about him, there are two hims in the story. So we're talking about the husband, we're talking about the boa. So the Gemara says, it's obvious we're talking about the boa. We have to be talking about the boa. So the Gemara says, ve'ela la boa. So good. So now, so good. So we have to be talking about the boa. And the mayim is going to be bodek the boa. So listen, so the Gemara says, okay, now I have a textual issue. And that is, go back to the Mishnah yesterday. So you notice in the Mishnah yesterday, so what do we say? We made 2 points in the Mishnah. One is a point of bidika. Two is a point of isser. Now, on the isser side of the Mishnah yesterday, the Mishnah was super clear. The Mishnah didn't use pronouns. The Mishnah said that just like she's usher to the Baal, she's also usher to the Boal. So I don't understand. Why would the Mishnah, in the first part when talking about bidika, why would the Mishnah use pronouns? And then the second half of the Mishnah, now we're actually using proper names. Why would you do that? So the olam's lebo. So the Gemara says, no, let's conclude with what we know. And that is, of course, the bedika is going on her and it's going on him. And of course, we know that the him is talking about the boa. We know that. And Reisha, I did the tani osa, tani oso. Say if I did the tani baal, tani boa. And as far as your textual problems with the Mishnah, there are no textual problems with the Mishnah because the Mishnah always prefers symmetry. This is a point that we make numerous times throughout the Gemara. And because it's true, it's correct. In other words, the Mishnah is really intended for commitment to memory, right? You and I are supposed to memorize the Mishnayos. Okay, I'm not going to speak for you, but I'll speak for me. I've not been dutiful about memorizing my Mishnayos, but we're supposed to be memorizing our Mishnayos. And in order to facilitate memorization of the Mishnayos, so the Mishnayos are written in a symmetrical fashion, so it's easier. It's easier to put in our head. So when the Mishnah says Osa, so the Mishnah is going to use the word Osa, complementing one another. When the Mishnah says the word Baal, the Mishnah is going to use the word Baal. So, but don't get caught up in the textual problems of the Mishnah because the Mishnah is going to be using a symmetrical language. Good. Okay, so point number one of today's daf, we already knew the conclusion, but the Gemara went through the process. And that is that when the Mishnah says that the Mayim is going to be bodek him and her, so the her we know is, of course, the only her in the story, and the him over here is going to be a reference to the Bawal. In other words, so now, if in fact they were guilty, if in fact they slept with one another, so she's going to die and he's going to die. Okay, that is point number one. Now we move on in the Gemara. We're on Chaf Ches Amud Aleph. Shenemru Uvau Uvau. Now, Rabbi Kiva Darshan in the Mishnah, how do I know that the Mayim is going to be bodik him and her? Because it says Uva'u, it says Uva'u. We have numerous psukim in the Parsha that say Uva'u. Okay? I'll ask the question, but I'm going to answer it, though. I'm not going to put anyone on the spot. How many times in Parsha Sota does it say the word Uva'u? Okay, so I'm thinking to myself, once, twice, well, I did the homework last night, so three times. Three separate times it says the word Uva'u. So, the Gemara now asks the following question, Ibailuhu, Uva'u Uva'u Kamar, O, Uva'u Uva'u Kamar. So now the Gemara is going to ask a technical question for Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva now, who's darshaning, how exactly is the drush according to Rabbi Akiva working? Meaning, he's learning out that there is a double bedika. It's going to be examining her, and it's going to be examining him, and we know that him is referring to the Boa. A double bedika. So is he learning it from the fact that it says Uva'u twice? Let me go in the correct order of the Gemara. Okay, let's do that again. I just want to go in the right order. Is it based on the fact that it says ba'u with a vav in the front, which means that the vav is one drasha, right? How many times do we darshan vav throughout Shas? And ba'u now is going to be a second drasha. So uva'u. That's one possibility. Alternatively, uva'u va'u kama. On the other hand, it says uva'u not once, but it says it twice. Now, you already heard me say it says it a third time. Hold that thought. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But it says it at least twice. Now, again, I'm going to just quickly cite the psukim over here, right? When we're learning Masechta Sota, we should be familiar with the psukim in Parshat Sota. There are not that many psukim to know, but here we go. So, this is now Pasuk Chav Beis. Pasuk Chav Beis, Uvau Ba Hamayim Hama'arim Lamarim. Okay. Pasuk Chav Dalet, Uvau Ba Hamayim Hama'arim Lamarim. And then the, no, what's it called? I did it wrong? Yeah, I did it wrong. Let's do that again. Pasuk Chav Beis, Uba'u Hamayim Hamarim Ha'ela B'me'ayach. Okay, sorry. That's Pasuk Chav Beis. Now we have Pasuk Chav Dalet. Uva'u Ba Hamayim Hamarim Lamarim. And now we have Pasuk Chav Zayin. Uva'u Ba Hamayim Hamarim Lamarim. So on three occasions, the Torah says the word Uva'u, and the waters are going to go in. And so now the Gemara's question is that the Drush is working on the fact that we have multiples of Ba'u? Or is it based on the fact that, no, we're not, it's not the multiples, it's the uva'u, the vav, and the ba'u. So the Gemara says, so Tashma, the Gemara says, well, I know the answer because I'm going to go back and I'm going to read the Mishnah. The Mishnah goes on to say, Kishem shasur laba, kach asur labawa, shenemar nitma'a vinitma'a. So let's go on to the next point of the Mishnah. The next part of the Mishnah is Isser. She's asur to her husband, she's asur to the ba'u. And I know that because it says nitma vinitma. So it sounds like it's that extra vav that we're darshaning. The Gemara says, okay, you're right, v'adayin tibaye. You haven't resolved the question because how many times does it say the word nitma in the parsha? Good question. Here's the answer. It says it twice. Nitma, nitma kamar, o nitma vinitma kamar. And so I'm going to ask you the same question again. When Rabbi Kiva's darshaning, is it because of the extra vav? Or is he darshaning the multiples of nitma in the pasuk? So we ask the question by Baal. And the Gemara says, well, let's resolve from Nitma. Oh, same question that we're going to be asking from Nitma. Is it the extra Vav or the multiples of Nitma? So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay. So far we haven't resolved the question. And in fact, all we just did is expand the question. So the Gemara says, fine, Midiktani Seifa. Rebbe Omer. So now we go back to our Mishnah and we go to Rebbe. Rebbe also agrees, but Rebbe has a different drasha. So Rebbe Omer, I'm not darshing the pasuk like Rabbi Akiva, but rather shnei pamim amr parsha nitma'a v'nitma'a. Echa labal v'echa labal. So Rebbe says, look at the two times in the Torah it says the words nitma'a. That's Rebbe who's arguing with Rabbi Akiva. Now, again, historically, Rebbe comes after Rabbi Akiva, so, but right now, and I understand that's a historical problem, but right now, Rebbe's arguing with Rabbi Akiva. So, if Rebbe's telling us that it's because of the multiples of nitma'a, and Rebbe's arguing with Rabbi Akiva, so this is easy logic. So that means to say now that Rabbi Akiva obviously takes a different path. So Mechlal de Rabbi Akiva Vavika Darish. So you see that Rabbi Akiva is darshing the extra Vav. Okay. Hilkach. Le Rabbi Akiva, Shisa Kreik Siva. So the Gemara says, okay. So Rabbi Akiva now is darshing the extra Vav. Okay. But you can't ignore the fact that you also have Ba'u and you have it now three times. So as the Gemara now is about to introduce to us, so according to Rabbi Akiva, how many drushes do we have? Six. What? How did we get to number six? That's a big number. Because it says Uva'u. We now know that Rabbi Akiva darshan is the Ba'u and the Vav. It does that three times. Three times two, that's six. So there are now going to be six drashas according to Rabbi Akiva regarding the water going into her and doing its job and doing its work. And so what the Gemara now is going to do is that six times over now, the Gemara is going to explain what are the six drashas for Rabbi Akiva. So let's count it out. So she's the Kraik Siva. So Chad, Litzava Dida. So so number one is that instructions for her. Instructions. Now everything I'm saying right now is coming out of Rashi. I'm not reading the Rashi inside, but you could see, you could follow along over here. No, well, not now, but go through the Rashi, see the Rashi inside. I'm just following Rashi in terms of how to understand the six drashas. Number one, an instruction that God gives to the water to do its work, to do its job with her. Now God instructing the water. Well, that's a funny sentence, but go back to what I said just a little bit earlier today. And that is that water normally doesn't kill. Even a water with a little bit of dirt doesn't kill, right? It's good to have a little bit of dirt in the water. I'm not sure if that part. I may take that point.
The dissolving of Hashem's name.
Oh, the dissolving of Hashem's name. Okay, so you have now a little bit of ink as well. Right. In other words, but it's miraculous. Obviously, the point is it's miraculous. So when it's miraculous, so that's the expression the Gemara is using over here, God instructing the water to kill her, meaning that under normal circumstances, water and dirt and a little bit of ink is not going to kill you. Okay, right? May not like it. Maybe, you know, may taste bad, but it's not going to kill you. So number one, instructions, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu now is going to turn this into a miraculous potion. That's for her. That's number one. V'chad, and number two, second drasha according to Rabbi Akiva, is Litzava Didei. Same thing, but now for him. But we know the him over here is referring to the boa.
He doesn't drink.
And he doesn't. Perfect. Okay, excellent. And he doesn't drink. So in other words, good. So in other words, the same miraculous way it's going to go and attack her. It's going to do it to him, despite the fact that he didn't drink. Right? Correct. Chad la'asiya dida. So and number three, we're up to the third drasha, asiya dida. Now this one's a little bit tricky. And again, everything I'm saying right now is Rashi. And that is that a haftacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising that this is going to work. Now, I'm not sure why that serves as its own separate drasha. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises. Meaning if the Torah says it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Why do I need a drasha to tell me assurances that this will happen? So I'm not sure. But anyway, but that's drasha number three. It's a haftacha to the Jewish people that this, in fact, will go through and go through to vis-a-vis her. And v'chalas yadidei. And now, same that we just said, but now for him as well. So that is numbers three and four. And acknowledgement, I'm admitting, I don't fully understand it, but still. That's three and four. And finally, now we're up to five and six. Chad, liyadiyah dida, and chad, liyadiyah diday. And now, the five and six is informational. Informational for her, informational for him. Now, what information are we talking about over here? So the information over here is as follows. That the water is going to go now, as the water is heading down her system, so first it's going to go to her stomach, and then it's going to go to her thighs. That is how it goes down. But as far as the klala is concerned, so the klala is that the thighs are going to explode and then the stomach is going to blow up as well. So the klala is first on thighs and then on the stomach. But as far as the actual water and the way it goes down, its pathway goes down, its stomach and then thighs. And as far as the information is concerned that's being provided to her, look, I know the klala says thighs, stomach. But just, you should know, this is what you're going to expect if in fact you slept with that man. It's going to be your stomach and then it's going to be your thighs. And we're going to say that for her and we're going to say that for him as well. In other words, that's the information that's being provided. So we have over here, according to Rabbi Akiva, not one, not two, but six different drushas over here. Uva'u. It's the vav, it's the ba'u. And it's three times over. That's six drushas. And we just went through the six drushas according to Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi. Now. Rebbe doesn't darshan the Vav. So that means that according to Rebbe, so we have now only three drashas. So, Tlasa Kraiksiva, Chalatsava, Chalasiva, Chaliyadia. So so according to Rebbe now, obviously we have to trim it from six to three. So again, it's going to be the same drashas, but obviously it's only going to be for her. The Tsava, that is the, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructing the water. Asiya, the promise that it's going to work, and the idea, and just the clarification that it's going to, first your stomach is going to blow up, and then your thighs. Okay. So that means now for Rebbe, so we do have three drushes. We now shaved it from six to three, and the three drushes only applying to her. But Rebbe agrees with Rebbe Akiva's conclusion. Everything that's going to be true by her is going to be true by him as well. But how do we get from her to him? Via drusha. The Gemara answer is, Nafkele detanya latzvos beten, velan pil yarech. Lebitno v'yarech ha-shabawal. So, we go on to, according to Rebbe, the pasuk of latzvos beten, her stomach is going to blow up, and linpol yarech, and her thigh is going to collapse. And according to Rebbe, that's not a description of her, that's a description of him. The Gemara says, how did you know? In other words, contextually, there's no clear indication that that's talking about the man. Sounds like it's talking about the woman. The Gemara says no. So the Gemara says that Rebbe already has another pasuk dedicating dedicated to describing what's going to be happening to her. The blowing up of her stomach, the collapsing of her thigh. So this pasuk over here is referring to him. So fine. So according to Rebbe, this is the first amud of today's daf. It's just a question of keeping track of the drushas, both according to Rebbe Akiva and according to Rebbe. Let's just do a quick look at the score over here. Right. According to Rebbe Akiva, I have six drushas because it's not only the bow, it's the vav as well. And the six drushas, three of them apply to her, three of them apply to him. Instructions, assurances, and information. For her and for him. That's according to Rebbe Akiva. And if I look at the scorecard for Rebbe, so Rebbe says it's not six drushes, it's because it's three drushes. Rebbe doesn't darshan the extra vav. And again, now it's going to be instruction, assurance, and information for her. And then the Gemara just went over, well, if that's true, then how does Rebbe know that everything, all of the above is for him as well? The Gemara says Rebbe has another pasuk. V'idach, now we go back to Rebbe Akiva. And for Rebbe Akiva, the pasuk that Rebbe just used, in order to complete the chart for him, what is Rebbe Akiva going to do with that pasuk? So, v'Rebbe, ha'hu demodel ha'koin. De'bet m'resha v'hadu yerech shalom lo'tzilaz alamayim amarim. So, for Rebbe Akiva, that pasuk of the explosion of the stomach and the collapse of the thigh, that is necessary for Rebbe Akiva because what we want to do is we want to make sure that she understands it's going to be specifically in that order. Because as far as the klala is concerned, the klala first focused on the thigh and then afterwards on the stomach. And the reason why we already did this earlier in the Masechta is because, and this is graphic, but the Gemara said it. So as she's accepting the bowl on her, so obviously first it's the thigh and then it's the stomach. So the klala is going to go thigh-stomach. But in terms of the actual onish is concerned, it's going to go stomach-thigh. And the Rebbe Kiva is going to tell you that the pasuk is telling us that the Kohen's got to emphasize that point to her. Because, and I know this is going to sound funny, I know it. Because if, in fact, the Kohen does not emphasize that to her, so as she's dying, she's going to be saying to herself, well, it's funny, the klala was going on the thigh, not on the stomach, in that order, and meanwhile, I'm dying first stomach and then thigh? I'm not so sure if this water really works. And that'll be her dying thought. And so to make sure she does not have such a dying thought, having any kind of skepticism whatsoever to the water, so therefore the Kohen's going to explain to her and emphasize to her, no, it's first going to be stomach, and then it's going to be thigh. And yes, by the way, we could just spend a moment marveling at the idea that as she is dying, she's going to be dying with thoughts of cynicism and skepticism. I'm not really sure if this water is that effective. It didn't do exactly what the Kohen said it was going
to
do.
Isn't it also to scare her one last chance before she drinks?
I mean, no. Once the name is erased, she's drinking.
No matter what.
She's drinking.
Unless she confesses,
no? A confession before the erasure of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, yes. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is erased, no longer confession going to be helpful.
They would force her mouth open.
Right? Correct. Absolutely correct. All right. So now... we're almost done. So, lahotzi laz al mayim amar. V'idach, now according to Rebbe, so, imkein lechtov kra bit navirecha, my betem v'yerech, shmamina lebawel. And Rebbe will tell you, no, if it was only talking about her, and if it was only focusing on her, the pasuk would have said bit navirecha, right, giving us the correct grammar that we would know that we're talking about her. Why would the pasuk say beten and yarech? Because it's talking about him as well. So the Gemara says, well, maybe that's talking just about him and not about her. So lichtov binov yarecho, my beten v'yarech, Well, the Torah puts it as beten v'yarech, not giving it a possessive afterwards. Not the word bitno, nor the word bitna. Why does the Torah write the word without a possessive? The answer is because the Torah actually wants the ambiguity because it's really talking about both of them. Meaning for both of them, the way in which they're going to die, both the woman and her boel, is it's going to be that it's an explosion of the stomach and the collapse of the thigh. And it's going to be in that order. And the reason why the Torah says beten yerech is because it's true. It's going to be going on him and on her as well. Okay. We have just more or less completed the Amud Aleph of today's daf, and honestly, it's been one singular point, but obviously with details. And that is that we know the Maim is going to be Bodek, him and her. And how do we arrive at that conclusion? There is nowhere in the Pesukim itself where it says clearly that the Maim is going to be Bodek, him meaning the Boel. The first thing that we did in today's daf is that we clarified that the him is referring to the Boel, which, as the Gemara just argued, what else are you going to say? Right? And for a moment, we entertain another possibility, but there really is no other possibility. It's going on the boel. That's point number one. And the second point of today's daf is, how do we know? Where in the psukim do we see that there's a bedika both on her and on him? So the answer is, it's a drasha. It's coming to us via drasha. And how exactly does the drasha work? So that's the details of today's daf. Rabbi Kiva understands that it's a six-pronged drasha. And according to Rabbi Huda Anasi, it's a three-pronged drasha. And then the back and forth, the classic back and forth of the Gemara, is what does Rabbi do with Rabbi Kiva's Pesukim, and what does Rabbi Kiva do with Rabbi's Pesukim? I'm Rabbi Yeshua Kachay Dorish Zecharya, Ben HaKatzav. Going back to what we saw in the Mishnah, so the Rabbi Yeshua says that this is how Zecharya Ben Katzav Darshan, Tan Rabbanan, and the Gemara now introduces us to a Braisa. Shalosh Pa'amim Ha'amorim Ba'parsha. So Im Nitma'a, Nitma'a, Vinitma'a. So we spoke today about the Bedika, and the Bedika, it says three times, Zubahu HaMayim. It also says on three different occasions, Vinitma. Okay, and the Braisa notes, it says it in Psukim, Yudalad Chavzayin Chavtes. Okay, so Lama. So why would it say three times? Now Nitma is, I'm sorry, just to make sure that we're all clear, we're changing gears right now. Previously, in the first half of today's talk, we're talking about the Bedika. Who's going to be affected by the water? Now we're talking about Isser. We're talking now about the status change that's going to be once the water is drunk and once it proves guilt. So the Isser is going to go on her and on him and on him. Okay, there are two hims that are going to be involved. So Echad Lebaal. So one Isser is going to go on the husband, meaning from the point now where she is clearly going to be guilty, so there's going to be an Isser for the husband. And Echad Lebaal, there's also going to be an Isser on the bowl as well. And Echad Lechuma, Divrei Rabbi Kiva, and a third one is going to be for an Isser of Truma. Meaning from this point forward, she's going to be unable to eat Truma. I hope you're wondering right now, as I've been thinking about this question.
That's the Isser for her.
Yeah. I hope you're wondering right now, as I've been toying with this question, not toying, but really pondering this question for some time. She's usher to him, she's usher to her, she's usher to him, she's usher to him. Baal and Bol, she's also usher to Truma. And I'd also like to add, by the way, that she's dead. So, okay, good. You're right. So I've been spending some time thinking about this question, meaning it's interesting to note that as much as she's going to be usher, she's also going to be dead. Meaning that if in fact she's guilty, so the water's going to kill her. So, and I know, by the way, in other words, and the obvious response to that is going to have to be that over here, we're going to be talking about cases where she's guilty and she doesn't die immediately. Okay, so this goes back to a discussion that we had previously in the Masechta, meaning that there are zechuyos that can go ahead and delay the effects, and there are other counter considerations that also may delay the effects for some time. So, I spend a lot of time thinking about this. But meanwhile, however, so there are, according to Rabbi Akiva, it says Venitma, says it three times. So that means now for her, there are going to be three Isurim, her husband, the Boel, and Truma. Now, I'm Rabbi Shmuel Kavachomer. So Rabbi Shmuel says, what I'd like to do is I'd like to not learn it via Drasha. What I'd like to do is I'd like to make a Kavachomer, says Rabbi Shmuel. Now, Rabbi Shmuel, the same Tana who brought us the Yud Gimel Midosh, Atar Nidreshes by him. So now he gives us a toolbox and he's going to take out one of the tools. Tool number one in the toolbox of Hadadarshan, Kal Vachomer, and I all the time know how to use the toolbox and they all know how to use the tools, but Rabbi Shmuel is, going to employ the Kal Vachomer. So kal v'chomer magrusha shemuteres lechuma asur lekuhuna zusha asur b'chuma ino din shasur lekuhuna. Look, if I have a grusha, so meaning she was a bas kohen, she got married, she got divorced, she allowed to return to eat chuma 100%. Now the truth of the matter is that if she has a child, so then the answer is no. But assuming right now that she's a bas kohen, she married a Yisrael, and then she got a divorce, she goes back, it's a pasuk in the Torah. She goes back and she resumes eating truma. Now, is she allowed to marry a kohen? The answer is unequivocally no. She's a grusha. She can't marry a kohen. So now, our sota, who is asur b'truma, is not allowed to eat truma, so eino din, she'asur lakuna, so for sure she's going to be asur to marry a kohen from this point going forward. Okay, now, if you're trying to figure out now this back and forth between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, hopefully at this point in time you're scratching your head. Hopefully you don't understand. Now, as everybody here knows, my goal is to make this as clear as possible. I'd like everyone to understand. I'm just pointing out, and I'm foreshadowing the Gemara coming up, because Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel seem to be talking not to each other, but they're passing each other by, like ships in the night. So the Rabbi Akiva now says, how do I know that she's Aser Ti Truma? I have drashas. Rabbi Shmuel says, how do I know that she can't marry a Kohen? Rabbi Akiva wasn't talking about her and her ability to marry a Kohen. Rabbi Akiva was talking about her and her ability to eat Truma. And Rabbi Shmuel's responding, I have a Kal V'chomer that tells me that she can't marry a Kohen. So the Gemara is going to point, I'm foreshadowing the upcoming Gemara. How did that conversation work? They're not talking to each other.
Maybe the act of beer with the boa.
Okay, good. So you're good. So you're already problem solving. So stay tuned. Tomorrow's daf. We're going to come back to this point, and we're going to problem solve. But good, you're right. Good. That's a way to think. Okay. So far, what we have over here in this brisa, right? We just started a brisa, and in the brisa, so we brought down Rabbi Akiva, we brought down Rabbi Shmuel in terms of the multiple isurim that apply to the woman once verified as an adulteress. So there are multiple isurim, and now the brisa continues. And as Rashi points out over here, this is, put a hard pause over here at this point of the brisa. And now, new point. So, ma tama lama vihi nitma vihi lo nitma, im nitma, lama shosa, im lo nitma, lama mashka. So, the Torah at this stage right before she drinks, the Torah is a little bit confusing if she is guilty. If she is innocent, well, which one is it? Now, we all know the answer. The answer right now is, we don't know. She knows, but we don't know. So lama mashke. So the Gemara says that obviously the Torah is trying to make a point, and the point is magi lecha kasef shasafik asura. And the point of the Torah is as follows: she went into a room, secluded herself with that man. What happened there? She knows, the man knows, but the husband does not know. From the perspective of the husband, what are we looking at over here? Safek. What do we normally say by safek? By safek, we normally say, well, if it's a safek, so. Well, it really depends on whether it's an Issa D'Oraisa or an Issa D'Rabbana, but normally by suffix, we say, we describe it as a suffix, and if there's a chazaka countering the suffix, we're going to go with a chazaka, but it's a suffix. What the Torah is coming to tell us over here is the following, and that is that suffix sota is usr. Again, I know I made this point on day one of the Masechta, but here we are 4 weeks into the Masechta, and the Brisa is really making this point as clear as day. And that is that when we're talking about our Sota over here, because there was Kinoin, because there was Rastira, those are two concrete stages. Once we hit those stages, despite the fact that we don't know what happened in that room, the husband doesn't know, and so therefore from the husband's perspective, it is a Safek. But in this particular case, Safek equals Isser. Normally, Safek equals Safek. And then we have to go accordingly to how we normally treat a Safek. In this regard, Safek equals Isser. Okay, good. So that's the Chiddush of the Torah when it comes to a Sota. So mikana tadan l'sheretz. So the Gemara says, and now we're going to make a fundamental point. Right? The remainder of today's daf is going to be making this fundamental point, which we've said throughout Shas. But today's daf is really the source location. And that is, we just learned that suffix sota equals isser. Now we're going to take this knowledge, this starting point, and we're going to apply it to tuma. Now tuma is a totally different area of halacha. Right? And over here, when we're talking about the woman, and we're talking about adultery, that's isser. That's not tuma. But because the Torah uses the word tuma in describing the sota, so now it allows us to make the jump. whatever we know regarding the Sota is going to be true regarding the world of Tuma. And therefore, the Gemara says, Atadan, Lesheretz, Ma Sota Shlova Saba Shogig, Shogig Kamezid, Ve Ones Keratzon, Asaba Safik Vadai. So when it comes to our Sota, so Ones and Ratzon are not the same. Shogig and Mezid are not the same. Meaning the woman is going to be a Sota only under the circumstances where she intentionally sleeps with the other man. Okay, and it will take a little bit more time right now. You'll forgive me, please. I'm not going to, the case of Ones, that's clear. In other words, if she's violated, she's not usher to her husband. Notable exception to Ineshes Cohen, but by Ones, that one's easy to explain. But in terms of Shogig, what exactly are cases of Shogig? See Rashi over here, who gives illustrations and examples of Shogig. Anyway, but the point is as follows, that when it comes to the Sota, so Ones and Shogig are not equal. Let's do that again. Ones and Ratzon are not equal. Shogig and Ratzon are not equal. And yet, Safik and Vaday. The Safik and the Vaday are going to be equal. Meaning for the Sota, Safik equals Isser. Safik equals Vaday. So Sheret, Shasabo, Shogig, Kemezid. And Ones Keratzon, Einodin, Shiasabo, Safik and Vaday. So now when we have a Sheretz, now Sheretz is an Avatuma. Now the way that the Sheretz communicates, transmits the Tumah is via Negia. So now when it comes to the Sheretz, so we know there's no difference between Shogig and Mezid, between Ones and Ratzon. There's no difference. And meaning you touch a Sheretz, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. There's no context to the contact of a Sheretz. You touch it, someone forced it on you. Doesn't matter. A Sheretz, somebody, you touch it not knowing it's a Sheretz, but then somebody afterwards you discover. Doesn't matter. In other words, the transmission of Tuma is an absolute. So once we know that regarding Sheretz, so now what about Safek? Maybe I touched a Sheretz. I don't know. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. So now what we're going to say regarding Sheretz is that a possible contact with a Sheretz is going to equal Vadai. Oh. We just took what we knew regarding a Sota. Safek equals Isser. And now we're going to say the same thing regarding Sheretz. Possible contact with the Sheretz is going to equal Vadai. Every time you hear throughout Shas, Safek Tumah Bereshus HaYachid, Sfeiko Tameh, it's because of today's daf, because of our Gemara today. But let's finish the point of the Gemara. So, Umimakum Shabbata, Ma'asot Bereshus HaYachid, Av Sheretz Bereshus HaYachid. So first of all, okay, if we're transferring this idea from Sota over to Tumah, that a Safek equals Vadai, but we can't extend it beyond what we know by Sota. By Sota, when do we say Safek Vadai? That's only Bereshus HaYachid. It has to be private quarters. Now, we're using the word Rosh Hashanah Yachid, just to be clear, we're not using Rosh Hashanah Yachid in a Shabbos context. By Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah Yachid has very clear parameters of what that means. It is a physical space enclosure. See the first perek of Shabbos for an extensive discussion for the first, like, 9 blot of the Masechta. But over here, when we say Rosh Hashanah Yachid, when it comes to Sota, what we mean is just simply, it's 2 people and only 2 people there in the room. Right? No more than 2. 3 is a crowd. 3 is a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So number 1, the only time that we're going to extend the halacha of Safik equaling Vadai is only when it's Rosh Hashanah Yachid, i.e. there's no more than 2 people. That's number 1.
That's for Tumah, that's for...
Right. In other words, because it's true by Sota, it's also going to be true now by Safik Tumah as well. Right. Correct. Okay, so Memakon Shabbat, Masot, Rosh Hashanah Yachid, so Av Sheretz, Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and Masota Davishesh Bodasi Shal, Av Sheretz, Davishesh Bodasi Shal. Oh, and another qualifier. Now, by Sota, obviously, we're dealing with people. So by Sheretz, the only time we're going to say that Suffolk equals Vadai is only when we're dealing with people. Somebody who has the capacity where you can ask the question. Meaning it has to be a thinking entity. Meaning, let's say, for example, your sheretz, right, you have a dead sheretz in your house and it falls and it touches a kli. But no one's manning the kli right now. It's a kli. It's an inanimate object. So there, we're not going to apply the rules of suffik tumah bereshus hayachid. In other words, there, we're going to just treat it like a regular suffik. Why not? Because again, the suffik equaling vada by tumah is only coming from sota. Since sota involves people who are animate and thinkers, so therefore, the Sheretz Tumah application is only going to be by people, which means, just to make sure that we're clear, it means that what is the case of Suffolk Sheretz? Suffolk Sheretz means that I, a person, came into contact with the sheretz. And I say I came into contact, I may have come into contact with the sheretz. Meaning, right, I swiped it, right, safer out, right? Right, terrible baseball analogy. In other words, right, did I touch it, yes or no? I don't know. Meaning right now I'm existing in Suffolk. Ah, so here we go. Because I am a thinker, right, I'm a person that can't think, yesh bo das yishal, and you also have to have the criteria of, the prerequisite of, it's Rishus HaYachid. So if it's Yesh Bo Das Yishal and it's Rishus HaYachid, so under those circumstances, Sfeiko, Tame. Oh, okay, fine. And Rashi also adds over here, you can see the Rashi inside, I'm just quoting it outside. Rashi also adds over here, let's say I'm holding the Kli, and the Kli possibly came into contact with Sheretz. Because I'm holding the Kli, so we're now saying that also qualifies as Yesh Bo Das Yishal. Obviously, you can't ask the Kli, but because I'm holding it, so now my das extends to the Kli as well. That would be another example of Yesh Bo Das Yishal. And Mikan Amru, and now let's just wrap up today's daf. So Mikan Amru, Daf Yesh Bo Das Yishal, and Rishus HaYachid, Sveiko Tame, and Rishus HaRabim, Sveiko Tame. Shein Bo Das Yishal, Bein Rishus HaYachid, Bein Rishus HaRabim, Sveiko Tame. So now here's the conclusion for today. And that is that if I have a case of Safek Tuma, where number one, it's a Rishus HaYachid. Number two, it's Yesh Bo Das Yishal. So then we're going to say that Safek is going to be Tame. Just like by Sota, Safek equals Tuma. Tuma meaning Isser. So too by Tuma, if it's Rishus HaYachid and Yesh Bo Das Yishal, so Safek is going to equal Tuma. Okay. That's the rule you hear throughout of Safek Tuma, Rishus HaYachid, Sveiko Tame. That's coming out from today's daf. Okay, good. So and there obviously, by the way, this lends itself to a lot of discussion regarding Suffolk in general. Meaning, what is the default position regarding Suffolk? Do we say normally that Suffolk is a Suffolk? We're going to be machmer. Suffolk, we're going to be mekel. Right, the differences we normally make between Doraisa versus Durabanan. Over here, we seemingly are talking about Doraisas, and we say that a Suffolk Toma Bereshus Rabim is going to be Tower. Right? Don't we normally say that Suffolk Doraisa, we're going to be Machmir? There is so much more to discuss over here today, but right now we just got, but hopefully we got the basics down really well. Okay. Where we're going to start tomorrow is that conversation between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel where they're not talking to each other, but they're talking past each other. And what the Gemara is going to do with the beginning of tomorrow is that we're going to try to wrap our heads around exactly how that conversation went. And obviously we're going to continue with this discussion. Let's quickly recap our daf today. Okay, really good. Okay, so in today's daf, we started with the Gemara and we talked about the mime being Bodek. Who is the mime going to be? Bodek, her and him. The her obviously is referring to the adulteress, and the him is going to refer to the adulterer, meaning not the husband. In fact, it can't be the husband because the husband has to be Menuka Minavan in order for this word to work. Good. So that was one. Why did the Mishnah not be clear about it? Why did the Mishnah use pronouns? The Gemara says because the Mishnah was interested in symmetry. Number two. How do we get to the point of the mind being bodek, him and her, via drasha? How do the drashas work? Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi. The Amud Aleph of today's daf, Rabbi Akiva, 6-prong drasha. According to Rabbi, it's a 3-prong drasha. Okay, that's point number two. And then point number three is that we did a brisa on the bottom of Chav Ches Amud Aleph, introducing us to, number one, the 3 nitmas in the parsha, meaning that from her perspective, there are going to be 3 isurim, an Isser to her husband, an Isser to the Boel, an Isser that she can't eat Truma. Then the Braisa brought down Rabbi Yishmael, who brought a Kavachomer. The Kavachomer, Rabbi Yishmael, seemingly has little to do with what Rabbi Akiva was, the point Rabbi Akiva was making. And so they talked right past each other. Tomorrow we're going to open up on that. Then the Braisa, introduces us to a big idea, right? In today's daf, if you want to talk about the big idea of today's daf, and that is that by Sota, we don't know what happened. More specifically, the husband does not know what happened when she secluded herself in the room. Obviously, suspicions abound, but no knowledge of what happened. So from the husband's perspective, it's Safek. And what does the Torah say? Safek equals Isser. She now, once secluded, she's Usser to her husband. Obviously, the warder can now validate, verify exactly what happened there. But before the warder, Usser. And now, because the Torah, in describing that Isser, uses the words Tuma, we're now taking that idea of Suffolk equaling Isser and transposing it and jumping and leaping over to the world of Tuma. The same thing is going to be true by Tuma. when I have Safik Tumah, but it has to follow Sota, which is that number one, it has to be Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Number two, it has to be Yesh Bo Dafsi Sha'ol. Under those circumstances, we say, Safik Tumah Rosh Hashanah Yachid, Sfeiko Tameh.